Any thoughts in particular?
Well, I think we were talking around somehow, getting to the point somehow that there was somebody in country, whether that's the current director of agriculture for the annual conference or somebody else, who can effectively serve as the point person for whatever agricultural efforts are going on. Mm-hmm. that United Methodists are involved in Liberia. Mm-hmm. Somebody that's got a grip on it all, somebody that knows what's happening on the ground everywhere. Mm-hmm.
Maybe, and so not to hurt Bishop Ennis and his brother's feelings, maybe this person could be linked to Shaffa Seward in a way that it's not, you know, they go out and visit all the projects. He knows where the things are. I'm just trying to think this through. Maybe if it was linked to a different area, it would be considered honing in on their territory. I don't know. Just an idea.
Well,
bless you.
Oh, bless you.
Anyway, we need a person.
Mm-hmm.
I think we also talked about it being important to exploit the opportunity that's presented by the 4-H mm-hmm. connection. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That we recognize that as a really significant opportunity, and we want to jump on it. And would that be one of the motivations for, you know, perhaps that means that a point person
just for that.
It probably, as we talked about, that may well be. It depends mm-hmm. on the bishop. And I think that could be Helen Roberts Evans. Mm-hmm. That also could be your conference lay leader in that conference, which would be Rudolph Murat.
Yeah.
Now, for sustainability, we need to put those things in place. Because if we don't, then we're just working and nothing happens. And then we get tired because we don't see the result. If we see results, we can get motivated to do more. So that's how we can sustain ourselves.
And I think a lesson, and Keith talked about it, the lesson we may have learned from our experience in the United States was technology transfer came from the youth, and so that is an appropriate
place to focus.
So maybe more agricultural education is the way to sustain this going down the line, perhaps.
And bringing some young people from here and some young people who are interested in going over, we go to. Mm-hmm. That would be a model for young people over there to see.
Well, it's incredibly important that if you take a team over there, especially that they're just not over there on a vacation, that they're actually going to do something productive.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to feel like they, then you got to hook, they're going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
if they just go over and mess around for a week, we haven't accomplished anything. So it's incredibly important that the projects that you tie people to really can be of benefit.
Mm-hmm.
I thought mm-hmm. to mention this morning from my experience when I went to, on my 30 days in Pakistan, the need for that orientation is not only on how it is done there and the culture aspects, so you don't make any stupid mistakes or such on culture, as it is when you're in the Muslim countries, you got to be very careful mm-hmm. on that. But a very strong educational program before they go, if they're doing a hook that accomplishes something.
The orientation here before the league.
The other thing that we talked about.
Those are details, though.
Yeah.
The other thing we talked about here that I don't know how we get this done, but is reprioritizing the role of agriculture as it relates to efforts between those of us working here and those of us over there. The emphasis for 25, maybe much years or longer than that, has been on education and healthcare. And as important as those are, at this point, if you're really going to do something impactful in the culture, agriculture probably has a more significant role to play.
Community-based healthcare is, it's based on health, on agriculture.
Agriculture.
And it's part of it, so, yeah.
If you're hungry, you got diarrhea, you got a problem.
Right.
So.
And the other idea of having the 4-H's in the schools and having that become part of that testing system, I think, I thought that was really good.
Embedded is a hot word these days.
Mm-hmm.
Embed that 4-H in United Methodist schools.
And the churches.
And maybe it would be good to talk to the.
Well, the schools. Embed the 4-H program in the UMC schools.
Yeah, but I'd like to do it, we don't have a UMC school in my area, but I want the church.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It might be a good idea to talk to the gentleman from Trinity United Methodist Church in Denver. They set up certain priorities, if you remember, the community had to buy into the project, community had to do so much. How did they manage that? It's very interesting, I like that.
I guess you wrote down the word, we all agree that this is a top priority.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Agriculture emphasis.
That it moves, that we're raising the importance of agriculture alongside education and healthcare as a primary focus. That's how I've written it to this point. Does that catch where we're at this point?
I'd like to hear Helen, or Caroline's, the way she characterized that earlier, and I'm not sure I can capture your words, so I'd rather, we were talking about the priority of agriculture in relationship to healthcare and education as the primary focuses of efforts between our two countries.
First, it's the understanding that agriculture is still a key sector all over Africa, even including Liberia. I think it is important to recognize that it is a priority as it relates to health, employment, the growth of the church itself, the ability to anchor people, especially the youth, to stop the exodus of youth from rural areas to urban areas where they really don't have work. The ability to have the youth have pride of what they do, because when they go into rural urban areas and start selling drugs and whatever, they erode their spirit, they erode who they are. However, if we can find ways of retaining them and making agriculture more respectable, having pastors train in agriculture as they do in theology, so that if you look up to your pastor and your pastor does 3 hours a week or a day or whatever tending to his garden, you then begin to readjust to that. But I also think that for some reason we have to find a way of re-educating the young people that agriculture is worthwhile, and they don't have to go and take and look for white collar jobs. They don't exist. They're diminishing. And you can do just as well staying on the land.
Well, it's going to take agriculture research to make it profitable for them, and they have to have an attitude towards profitability, whereas many of these countries, it's just been sustainable, feed my family, period. I
had presented a thought earlier that there's no one magic bullet of a way of doing this. We have to consider Brother Pride's thinking here, that we need, if we're going to do agriculture, we need to do it on a commercial basis. That's long term. What is the short term remedy? I also mentioned that when I was in school, we woke up at 5 and dug and tended to the cattle. We grew bananas. We grew pineapples. We grew vegetables. And it did hurt us. Maybe it made us appreciate every aspect of it. Should we then say out of the 100 schools in Liberia, 50 of those start to have an agriculture component? You know, young kids enjoy growing things. Mm-hmm. You give a child something and every day go and see that thing, you see this child come alive. Let's do it with kids.
Exactly. One thing is, this idea that we now go back and put them in agriculture, isn't it, was it the World Bank only within the past year has come to that conclusion? Oh. And so it's very timely right now if something like that is also putting the emphasis that we go along with that.
And we have to sell it too. It's a marketing piece. We have to sell the idea. Mm-hmm. Radio, television, I mean, we have to bombard the airway with what we think is best practice. If we want to change the paradigm, we have to do that. So we, you know, my brother works for the radio TV station, national radio TV station. We can have a program. We could have, I could get the farmers that I'm taking there to have a program on the air and talk about farming. And
you mean something other than a Nigerian soap opera?
Yeah. No, this is radio. This is radio. Yeah. Yeah, we could do that. And, you know, you'd be surprised who's listening. Maybe some of the ministers are listening. Maybe some of the officials are listening. And they will get some idea. Well, wait a minute, these farmers from America have made lots of money in farming. Mm-hmm. They made a living out of farming, mm-hmm. making $200,000-$300,000 a year out of farming or more. Wow, they're telling us we can do the same thing. Then maybe somebody in mind will start bending this way or flexing here and there. And we just want to get it done, right? We want to get it and see some results. That will motivate you to want to do a little bit more if you can see some. You don't want to work 10 years and nothing's happening. You don't see any result for your efforts. Yeah. That's gonna, you know, then Paul, when Paul went out and preached and got converted, he felt good. Uh-huh. He said, I'm gonna go do some more. You know, so that's what we gotta do. I mean, we gotta change those people's thinking over there.
Mm-hmm. Little church I served for 6 years, 17-year-old kid, his entire goal in life was to be a farmer. When he's 17 years old, he went out and bought his first 175 acres. Mm-hmm. His dad farmed 3,000.
Yeah.
Okay. But you know, his mentality was focused. He knew.
Yeah, what he wanted to do.
What he wanted to do, and that this was going to make, you know, he could raise a family. He could be successful. He could contribute. Yeah.
And in Bonga, the goal is to save enough money to buy that little two-wheel vehicle so you can taxi people around, because that looks like an easy way to make a living.
Yeah.
And
there's the difference.
Yeah. Sure.
Instead of investing something, mm-hmm. all they want to do is, you know, pick up the quick buck.
So trying to figure out how do you change the mentality? Mm-hmm.
Well, you got to sell.
You got to sell it.
You got to sell it. If you're in South Carolina, you need to come to Chicago Public Schools and help us. Because it's exactly the same
dynamic. It is the exact same thing.
Yeah. So it's the message.
But that's why.
Worldwide.
That's why Helen was in 4-H when she was in high school in suburban Chicago.
You want to help?
Yeah. Yeah, made a difference. Edith, were you trying to get in?
Well, yeah, I'd like to. I really like the three priorities as uh-huh. you outline them, but I think we need to think about what it is. I think we're charged to think about what it is that we are willing to do in the next 6 to 12 months. Mm-hmm. So, and so some of the, what, a lot of what we're saying is we advocate on it.
Recommend.
That agriculture be reprioritized in the thinking of the Liberia Annual Conference of its priorities relative to health and education, and that these are all really mutually beneficial. This is a this isn't robbed from education and to serve agriculture. It's all related. Again, but what? So what are we willing to put out there? Right now, I'm sure that what would come back is, okay, you want to reprioritize. You know, we need some resources to put some people on this task. You know, people equals resources. So what are we willing to do? What can we say that we're willing to put out there?
Yeah, let me just. We're leaving about the 20th of February. We're going to spend the first 10 days in Sierra Leone actually doing what you're talking about. We'll spend a couple of days on the farm. We're going to spend a couple of days at Poloco looking at the site and trying to figure out how we would develop an agricultural training center there, and a couple of days at Jolly University actually working with the entire agricultural sector of the country to take a look at what's the state of agriculture in Sierra Leone today. My problem is I can't do Sierra Leone and Liberia both this year. I mean, I don't have that much time or the financial resources to be over there for 6 weeks to do this. But some of this we can do online. Some of it I can have Alfred doing for us. And by this time next year, at least have a much better framework about what the state of agriculture is in Liberia, what's the infrastructure, the support infrastructure for agriculture there? How do we tie into that that support system? What's going on the ground? Because before you can plan, you got to do the research to find out where we are.
In addition, what I plan to do, the Secretary of Agriculture of Liberia, Minister of Agriculture, we are going to meet with her.
Okay.
And I'm taking this forward with me, and we're going to sit down and talk and get her ideas what direction the country wants to go or what her priorities are. And then we'll try to fit what we want to do within that framework so that we're not spinning our wheels or duplicating stuff. And I think if we can get some sense, I think they even have some financial support in the country. They even have some machinery that they could help do, you know, they'll clear the land for you, that kind of stuff. The government would. So we want to find all of that out, and if we can do that, then we have some resources that we can tap into to help us do the kind of things that we want to do. So if you don't get to Liberia until next
year, I'll be there, but I won't.
I'll get that.
I can do everything I need to do.
I will do that for you. I will get that information to you.
Well, it'd be good for you two to be networked because you can exchange information
and
include, at least the three of you at this point to be helpful of capturing that and looking at the consciousness and the direction we could actually move to help that priority happen.
You also have a conference lately.
With Rudolph.
When we go, we in fact meet with the President of the University of Liberia. We meet with the head of the Ag and Forestry Department for the University of Liberia. We meet with the Minister of, all of those things are done. So you have in place now, within that conference, some folks, and you will hear the same thing from Rudolph Marab, chair from Carolyn, in terms of the needs in this process. Bob and I are, I think we'll get there in January.
January what?
In January of next year.
What day?
I'm looking at the 20th through maybe the 2nd.
I'm leaving on the 1st.
Maybe the 1st. So we should kind of...
I'm leaving. Coming back here on the 17th.
But in terms of some of those, in terms of folks in Liberia within the Methodist organization, there can be a great deal of help. Rudolph is one of the key ones from my perspective.
I'll get the name from him.
And he's a business person. And so he's going to look at it from kind of, but he also is a, I think if you talk with Bishop Ennis, I can't imagine anyone any more dedicated to the Methodist organization and from a lay standpoint than Mr. Marat. But, in the context of talking with Edith, right now we are exchanging emails in terms of here are the reports back from the 4-H, here's what we're doing, Amaru, Priscilla, in terms of the progress that's being made. Bonnie can tell you if she went out to look at the rubber trees. So, there's some things like that. So in terms of developing on the 4-H side, to give us a charge, particularly with Bob's extension background, we can try to do some of that in terms of some of that groundwork. In terms of Bonga, Jim, if we, in terms of some specific projects, Carolyn, do you see minister? Throughout the concept of this cross training of the ministers, I was doing it with another non-Methodist group, and the reaction I got from this side was the ministers would think that they had a higher charge than to be involved with agriculture.
See, that's what we need to change, because okay. If the ministers already have that mentality, how are they going to lead people to do it? And as we were speaking, I'm thinking that all these needs somebody to anchor them, and I don't know it will be Keith, because I think the group wants to share what's going on, what's happened. And I think we need some timeline. However, while whoever is in Liberia next is to speak with somebody within the conference to talk about a training for some of the pastors on agriculture, which now we're looking at as a priority, and arrange for that type of meeting. And whether you, together with whoever can be identified on the ground, or with Mozart, our missionary, come and work with the pastors so that then they also need to change and understand the importance of it. So maybe we say the 7 months we have an email coming from Keith to let us know what has developed. And I'm thinking that I was hoping that this meeting, this summit, can happen again next year. Mm-hmm. So that these ideas that are now floating around, we can see which ones are concrete or which ones we still want to pursue but hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm. Is there going to be some opportunity to meet with Bishop Ennis about this while we're here?
I think we'd need to just talk with him and see if we could set aside some time. And
because he certainly could give us, because my sense is that he's certainly...
Yeah, he said he was going to float around to various groups, but he hasn't floated here as yet.
Yeah, it was hard to find this
room. But also, I think tomorrow during the reports, we can mention that this is what we recommended, and we suggest that we would like to share these ideas and have his views on these ideas, so that it's put there, and if you want a further conversation, that can take place.
At the very least, we need to have somebody who is the facilitator of the agricultural working group of the Liberia Summit, who's going to continue this conversation and stay on top of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand the background of all your ministers as far as how they involve a training program, or do we really need to instead have a cadre of agricultural missionaries that is take the recently retiring agricultural teachers from the colleges and the high schools and the community colleges and the retiring extension people throughout the Midwest, and with proper guidance?
I think one doesn't exclude
12-month program.
One doesn't exclude the other. If there are missionaries that can be deployed to go and do agriculture, that's fine. But we still need a training within the leadership, within the pastors, on the fact that agriculture is a priority. And this working group think that this priority impinges on everything else that they're going to do, whether they're going to be at the pew or where. They need to.
Speaking of.
Yes. Roosevelt, thank you. You got here just in time.
Were your ears burning?
You found it. Bless you. Well.
Well, if we got some information.
Yes.
Close the door.
The spirit. Yeah. Don't let him out. He may run for the door when he hears this. I'd like to give just a brief summary because our conversation came around to we need to talk to you. Because there's a very strong feeling among us here that agriculture needs to take a new priority alongside education and health care. Because it's so integral to the, even healthcare, but to the economics and the whole social, cultural experience. And it packs so many things. And just to briefly say, we have been thinking about how can we do that, you all in Liberia, and be a partner together in helping that to happen. What does that look like in terms of leadership? How can we take the 4-H club piece to a new level and maybe have a goal of having a 4-H club in every United Methodist school and where there isn't a school in a church there. But the whole question is how do we connect with Jim, who's the coordinator of agriculture, what his responsibilities are, how do we be a support there, how do we go beyond, take it the next step and go in new directions there. How do we even change the consciousness of clergy and how they view agriculture and get to the young people at that point?
I guess about 3 or 4 years ago, agriculture was a major part of my Episcopal address at the annual conference. I stated that, and as you all know, agriculture is life. Without food, we cannot survive. Of course, it depends on agriculture. Agriculture is food. So I encourage our districts to go into planting what we call cassava, planting pineapples, and even into rubber trees, to plant rubber trees. And a number of them have done that so that they the conference can be self-sufficient to the district and all of that. Mm-hmm. And recently I revamped the agriculture committee and named a very, very successful, business fellow by the name of Curtis Finley. He's a chair. And then the former ambassador to Liberia, former ambassador of Liberia to the U.S., Ambassador Minor, Charles Minor, I think he's a co-chair with other people. These are guys who are involved in agriculture. So they are really, really committed to that. They've been having a series of meetings and to plan the agricultural direction, of the church so that people will take care of themselves, their churches, their pastors, and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I would say that maybe give me about a week or two, and mm-hmm. I will call Monrovia and get their plan. Mm-hmm. The kind of thing they have for the agricultural program of the church and of the people of Liberia. Yeah. But I think we need tools, seeds, and all sort of good things. Of course, the 4-H Club is already the head of my dear friend here. I think we're in that direction now. We have a 4-H coordinator in our education office, and he was here recently for training along with Helen and so forth. And then our conference day leader, Rudolph Marat, is very much mm-hmm. involved in it. Mm-hmm. So give us about 2 to 3 years from now, and then the 4-H, club would be a part of every school in Liberia. So we take agriculture very seriously. If we have never done so, this is the time that that needs to be done.
Well, see, the Spirit was moving us that direction, too, and already moved you there. That helps our conversation. But we have some folk here that are significantly involved in agricultural pieces, and it's obvious the folk that you've called together are ones that we need to network with in doing that.
Yeah. So I will call Monrovia maybe Sunday and get James to give me the names of those guys and then their plan, you know. A lot of the things would end up going to poultry production. We used to, many years back, used to go into large poultry production at White Plains. We used to get a lot of money out of that. And the facilities are still there. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, improving on them. And then we also had a oil palm plantation up in there. But it would be another way we can cut down the ones we have there already and replant. So many agricultural activities that we can undertake. So,
if I may.
Yes, go ahead.
Some of the experiences, my experiences, is that the leadership, the pastors, are usually not on board. They feel that their calling is to be in the pulpit. And I'm saying that until and unless we can sensitize the pastors so that they take agriculture seriously. That is a necessity. And this is some of the conversations we're thinking. Do a training, sensitize them so that the congregations and the people who look up to them, if they see that they take it seriously, it would be so much easier. So that's one thing. And also their large church land, pieces of land. If we can either work through the universities or 4-H or whatever, and start to do, in addition to small-scale farming, start to look into really large-scale agricultural products or food. I agree with the rubber, whatever can bring in an income, but also food can be a very big income-generating source of income if we use large tracts of land. I don't know what you think about it, or it has been addressed by you and your...
We're working on that. In fact, we try to work with the seminary also to have an agricultural component to their seminary education. You know, learn to grow a little gardening at their backyards and so forth. So we've been really encouraging that. It's just a matter of getting up and go and do it. So they need a motivation and so forth. I mean, don't just preach. When Jesus said, "I was hungry," he provided the food. So if you as a preacher, you know, you're going to tell people about, you know, especially in rural Liberia where you have so much land, vast land that you can make good use of. I mean, you just have to, you know, like practice what you preach, go by what you preach. So it's something.
And we could develop a program called Give a Pastor a Pig.
and
a poke.
Chicken in every pot.
Something like that.
But are the seminary, the heads of the various seminaries, do they agree with you at the present time?
Yeah, except that, well, you know, the seminary is part of the university, so maybe the president of the university were not very supportive of that aspect, but it was going very well, and I don't blame the president. I blame the dean, because the dean of the seminary, because that's her ministry, that's her school. She has to make sure that it happens, so we have to reintroduce that into the seminary. It was going very, very well. You know, so, of course, we got one seminary, you know. Yeah. But it's important. And I need to lift that up in my Episcopal address again. You know, I'm talking about finding your gifts and talents in order to serve the church. You know, so agriculture is a gift. You know, and so it's already there. You don't have to look for it. So, but go and make use of it. Yeah. So I need to reemphasize that we, if Liberia is going to be self-sufficient. If Liberia is going to feed herself, the church must take the initiative. That is why we invest so much money in students who go to school, especially seminary too, because they become the hope, the eye opener of the people. So if they are involved in agriculture, I mean, the people will certainly get on board.
Well, certainly one aspect of what Caroline was talking about is the clergy who are doing agriculture then become models for what others could do as well. It's larger than just the economic piece for themselves, that it may provide assistance. Yeah, Robert?
We had several other points, too. Are you going to be able to...
Go ahead and lift them up right now if you've got them in your mind.
The one there, as far as working more, we have all these different projects we want to do in agriculture to have more coordination with the person in charge of agriculture there.
Right.
Then having all these things going on out here, but not having the leadership of the local people, making sure they fit in. And
I have always told the agriculture coordinator, I said, well, I mean, you are not the one who's going to do the agriculture work, but your role is to train people, go into the local churches, into the district, and train people to take initiative rather than you going yourself to develop the farm, you know. I don't think that should be your business, but go and empower the local churches through their pastors and lay people so that they can get involved. Conduct seminars in agriculture, you know, field trips, and go to other places where they are growing rice, you know, large-scale rice production farm and all of it, and show the people the way forward and so forth. So, but they have always been the traditional way, okay, I'm the agriculture minister, so I have to do the farm, you know. And I said, we need to graduate from this to empower them, to challenge them, and so that they can get involved. So when they come to annual conference, as members of the conference, superintendent will be able to report that this pastor, you know, from this district was able to produce, you know, so many eggs, you know, from the chicken farm, or brought like, okay, we had a lot of food here today, a lot of bananas and plenty today to this conference to accept. We're hosting this conference. This pastor from this district is responsible for all of this and so on. You know, that's the kind of thing I've been trying to encourage the agriculture people to do. So, yeah.
Is he following your lead?
I think.
Can we help him, or do we need to help in some way?
I think he needs to help. You know, again, training. You know, training. How to go about doing it. You know,
Bishop, if I may, one of the thoughts that came through this group is most likely finding a coordinator. We probably have them already because we are not familiar. But this coordinator, coordinating all the agricultural programs and being able to send reports timely to the people who are donating, but also work with our missionary Mozart, who is in Ghana.
Yeah, Mozart,
So that Mozart can work with this coordinator to carry out training for farmers, or we even thought about schools for young people. Right in the young people starting to learn about agriculture at a very early age. These are just thoughts that were floating by, that we wanted your guidance and leadership
During the Liberian crisis, I was principal of a rural mission school called Camphor Mission. And Camphor Mission became the home of over 5,000 displaced people. And those displaced people, we were able to feed them for over 3 weeks from our agriculture program. Mm-hmm. You know, we grew rice, we grew vegetables, and all kinds of things. And we were chickens and all, and we were able to feed those people. Well, the work was done by the students, you know. The student did that.
Mm-hmm. In my school, we used to provide food for the whole school.
Yeah.
The, you know, from milk, from chicken, the vegetables, from everything we used to
use. So it's just a matter of revisiting those things. And strong agriculture coordinator, of course, he will need transportation, because that's what made the agriculture program effective many years back, you know, when the war had not, you know, started. We had they had transportation. They used to move around the country, conduct workshops, and so forth. And they were also committed very much to the work, the agriculture program at White Plains, you know. And so transportation will be like a truck, you know, we call that pickup in Liberia, that could make them to be mobile. And they had about two trucks for them, of course, they were walking, and the rebels took away the trucks and all of that. But that made agriculture very, very encouraging at the time. So we just gradually getting back into those things, you know. So maybe the easier way not to go to some of those places would be by motorbikes, because motorbikes are so popular in the country now, but some of the guys are very afraid to, you know, ride a bike, because the riders are very dangerous as well.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
In Uganda, they have a special word for people who have broken their bones because they fell off those things.
Yeah.
It's really very dangerous.
Pam Pam.
Yeah.
Call them Pam Pam.
Pam Pam, yeah.
Bishop, did you have did the coordinator have a team of people that it would encourage each other to do certain things? Now, one time I get discouraged.
Yeah.
But if you got two or three people doing, you know, encouraging each other, then maybe they could make a little, you know, incremental progress.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's supposed to be agriculture coordinators in each of the districts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, each of the districts.
Okay.
And it's just a matter of, you know, really motivating them to be able to get to work.
Okay.
Have to get seeds and to start the work. Two coordinators are very important. But then, you know, transportation is an impediment because, and the districts are very far apart from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So how does he get all the way to the southern end of the country, Maryland?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But once he had transportation, once a month, probably twice a year, he can go to the very far away prison. In a very deep rural area there where the soils are very productive, you know, very, very productive. So anything you grow, you know, can. But now how do they market those things from the southern end into the city again? You know, and the roads are terrible, you know. Recently coming from Swedru into Monrovia, the vehicle that got stuck for like almost 3 days. Of course, I went there, and my wife and I went there for a seminar, and we managed to cross the road, and we came back. When we got back home, I mean, the road was just completely closed to travelers for almost a week, you know. People were buying just what we call a cup of rice, maybe. They were buying rice for like $100 Liberian or $200 Liberian. So it was not possible to get food into the southern end of the country, except they had to go to Ivory Coast, you know. But once we begin to have, you know, asset to gurus in the future, these things will be all right. But we have, people are growing food, and the church must get involved, you know, to challenge our people to get involved in agriculture.
Yeah. Robert?
Yeah, I think you probably, I'm going to see what your feeling would be. I think it's on behalf of our working with our bishop. I was trying to stress also the need. Before we go there, as years ago, there was a book written on the ugly American, going there with our concept of what we're going to do, as opposed to we need a thorough training on how things are done there, cultural aspects, and real orientation before we go there without going with misconceptions and making serious mistakes.
I agree, you know, education. Training, these are key things to development, to anything we do. I want people to have a basic understanding, and they will have an appreciation to do what they are called to do. So training is very, very important. How to motivate people, how to inspire people, how to say thank you to people for, you know, doing something. So once we get people in, you know, kind of mold, I think great and wonderful things can happen. The war took away a lot of the brains, you know. So a lot of people say have that war mentality, and of course the whole issue of dependency. Wartime, you know, you don't produce anything, you know. You just, people gonna do it for you. So for almost 14 years, people were begging. So we got used to it, and So to do something new met with resistance, but insistence, you know, can reduce that dependency, yeah.
Thank you, Bishop. I think maybe what he's asking for is some orientation for annual conferences.
Yeah.
Coming from here, going to Liberia, so that they have some exposure to the culture in Liberia.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the training would be great and all that, but people need to understand the difference in cultures before they interact to avoid.
We train each other.
Huh? Yeah. Exactly, it's a mutual perspective. Yeah.
I would assume Bunny has something like that, doesn't she?
She does that with our work groups.
Yeah.
And tries to help
and
do that preparation.
United Methodist Volunteers, you were a UMV week who I talked about earlier. They really do some thorough training, and they will come if you invite them. Lisa Jones and her team. And they've done it over the years, so they have a training model.
I have instructed the VIM coordinator to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, if people are going to come to go to Ganta, at least spend 2 days in Monrovia, and use one of those days for just orientation, orientation before you go. But sometimes a lot of us will go, and the next day we're on our way to. To Hapo and all of that, so I've instructed the VIM person to make sure that there is orientation, you know, at least a 1 day orientation, so that people can be familiar with the culture, you know. And one of the things I keep telling people too, for example, I was in my own little orientation because I'm so busy, to tell people never to share their information with people. Give me all your telephone number, you know, your email addresses and all. You'd be surprised if you did that. Maybe by 4 o'clock in the morning, you have a phone call.
Yeah.
This guy wants to come to America.
Yeah.
Or somebody's sick, he wants to carry the person to the hospital. It's her daughter, you know, had not gone to school for X number of, you know, weeks and so forth. And yeah, so I share with you people that when you're in Liberia, if somebody wants your email address or telephone number, just say, we're going to leave it with the bishop. If you want our number and the information about us, go to Bishop Ennis. And they know they're not going to come to me, you know. Because I had one lady calling me one time from Arizona, you know. I mean, she was there really crying on the phone. She said, I went to Liberia once, and I was able to help this school. The guy was the principal, and I helped this school. But after about 5-6 months, every day this young man was calling me collect, asking me for this, asking me for that.
Mm.
So I just told her, I said, don't share your information. If he calls you, don't pick up the phone, you know. Because all you were calling for to give him money.
Don't accept the call.
Yeah, accept the call. So.
That's all right.
So that's part of the orientation, you know. Yeah.
Give them the email address. You can always hit delete.
Yes.
Well, I'm a simple thinker, so if I'm wrong, just tell me. But agriculture is about the only God-ordained vocation, you know, from the very beginning. And I think we should take that as more an encouragement. And so many young people in the United States and in Liberia think to get their hands dirty is not good.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good.
So true. They got different concept, you know, work, you know.
Caroline's thought about training the pastors to communicate the dignity of work and a willingness to get your hands dirty is essential to a culture.
But it's essential that the dean agree with you first. Or the students will never buy into it. So
exactly.
So
The principals and all
principals
of
the deans.
I'd like to share something that I think indicates the power of what Carolyn was suggesting regarding training pastors. I heard Shin Trilly give a talk at the Detroit Annual Conference this year. In this case, it was about the Imagine No Malaria, or more broadly speaking, about the world's anti-malarial efforts in which the United Methodist Church is a partner. And she said they ran in the area of Sierra Leone, I believe it was, a pilot test of trying to disseminate information out into rural areas about actually using the mosquito nets. And seven different partners, each were given seven different areas in which to test their model of implementation, where the United Methodist Church's implementation model was to train their local pastors and have the pastors emphasize the importance of the use of the nets. And guess which plan won in best implementation? It was the United Methodist Church's implementation. I found that extremely powerful and an indication of the role that pastors can play well beyond the direct saving of souls. I think what I made that connection when you were talking, that you're really onto something.
Yes. It's, they can be change agents.
They should be change agents.
Exactly.
It's given, they see
at a lot of levels.
They are held out to the community. They see people every Sunday. Yeah. How many people have a job where you see these people every week? You have that opportunity to change them, to mold them, to guide them. And so, if they can help the community.
Any other comments or questions for Bishop Innes while we have him? Our time is just about exhausted here. Yes, Robert?
Patrick took the collation, the offering.
Yeah. No one will get it.
We sing the song first, though.
Yeah.
So the action steps, as I understand it, then, are that you're going to get us back something pretty quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
After which we then analyze and determine
which
of their priorities we can assist with.
Right.
And who's going to be the point person?
Yes, we need to talk about a point person, because it doesn't have to be me. It can be, but it doesn't have to be.
It could be a group. It could be the whole whatever. You know,
yes.
Would you be willing to do that? Okay.
Oh, I can. Yes.
I think
yes.
Should.
Robert? Yeah, Robert?
I won't be able to be with you tomorrow, but would you still convey my personal...
About the cultural economic understanding?
I'm talking about the importance of the motivation for the local church to have feedback.
Oh,
we have an example where we gave $12,000 and we don't know what's happened.
I don't even know about it, where it was sent.
But it's just important for him to know, particularly from our side here, I guess, is to, to motivate that church to continue, is they got to have feedback.
Which church was that, just in case somebody knows about
it? Well, St. John's.
St. Edwardsville.
And it was sent.
Again, see, I'm new to the committee. I don't know where it was went. Bonnie's going to check it out.
Was it sent to the general board?
I don't know how it was.
Yeah, that would be important to know.
So, that's important. Yes.
So whoever sent the money from your church, you know where it was sent.
No, I don't have.
I didn't say you.
That's what you would need to.
Whoever sent the money from your church.
I will check back.
Yes, you know where
in order
it was
to
sent.
Track it, we'd have to do that.
That's where the trail begins.
Bonnie said she will look at that, and I don't know, talk about advantage.
Right, because if you know the general direction, it helps.
Yeah.
You know, whether we're going through Caroline at that point, or whether we're to Bishop Innes to check at that point.
Barbara's still sitting in the church conference.
I've learned that too. Oh, we haven't sent that yet. Oh, okay, you might want to do that.
That's right.
All right.
One of the pieces of advice that I usually give to people who send money to the board, once you send your money to the board, just write me an email and say, Bishop, we send X amount of dollars to the board on so and so and so day. With the check number. Then I will call either hall or the advance office and say, this church in Illinois sent X amount of dollars for this district or for this local church in my area.
I just want to know, and she will tell me, okay, I'm going to check with the advanced people, but if I call the advanced office directly, it was the bishop, just give her 5 minutes and we'll get back to you. Mm-hmm. And they will check and say, okay. They always request for the, the check number and all of that. Mm-hmm. So they must have this very beautiful working relationship. So.
Maybe it was about a year ago, and it was for Wells, so it was, there was a something Well for Life or something
Water for Life, right?
Yeah, Water for Life. If it went that direction, then we can track it through that.
It could be Encore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if we can find a date or whatever, I can.
The name of the church, and I can also, check with the coordinator of that program.
Mm-hmm. Bonnie is supposed to be helping me on this, so I'll work with her on this.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I apologize to the church, but we're here, Mm-hmm. Sorry for that.
Well, thank you all for your input. It's been a blessing to be a part of this conversation.